This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. Canadians all know Cineplex is the dominant movie theater chain in that country, and the Toronto-based company has also been expanding its reach in recent years into other related lines of business. Cineplex now has entertainment-centric restaurant bars, it's bringing Topgolf into Canada, it sells out-of-home media, and runs a thriving digital media group that's doing most aspects of digital signage for major enterprise customers in Canada and beyond those borders. Fabstan Gary was a senior real estate guy with Cineplex, charged with building and managing the company's movie house portfolio. He had digital media added to his responsibilities a few years ago, and while it was unfamiliar territory at first, he's embraced digital to a degree that it is now his primary focus in the company. I was passing through Toronto a couple weeks ago, and Fab kindly took some time to show me around the new office space, which is set up to help ideate, deliver, and manage digital signage solutions for Cineplex clients.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to host you in our new offices, and I hope you enjoyed our little tour.
Flashy new offices. I have a lot of listeners from all over the damn place. Canadians out there will know who Cineplex is, but Americans and people in Europe and elsewhere probably don't, so maybe explain what Cineplex is and how you guys fit in.
Sure. CDM is a division of Cineplex.
So Cineplex Digital Media is CDM.
Right. Cineplex is it is Canada's oldest exhibitor of film, been around for approximately 105 years. The name is synonymous around the world with movie going, and we've been in the business for many years. We've been in the food service business for many years, and I guess you could say we've been putting images on screens for a long time, and we know the art and science that goes into affecting an emotional reaction between someone who's watching the content and someone who's putting the content up.
Mm-hmm.
The company has been diversifying over the last 5+ years. We've always been in the media business for a number of years. Natural extension was to get into the digital media business, and we did that through the acquisition of Foresight, DDC, and most recently EK3 about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So today, Cineplex continues to be Canada's largest entertainment company with cinema entertainment, location-based entertainment, soon to be Topgolf entertainment.
I love Topgolf.
Yeah, actually just played it the other night down in Florida, and it was packed on a Sunday night.
Yeah.
It was always great to see. Player One Amusement Gaming and our digital media team.
Mm-hmm.
Our digital media business is broken out into two areas. One is our media group, which sells on-screen advertising in cinema, and in the digital out-of-home networks that we have accumulated here at CDM.
So on the media side of the business, are these owned networks, like it's your stock, or are you repping like a shopping mall's displays?
A combination. We're flexible in how we approach deals. Oftentimes there will be a joint investment. We have invested all the capital. It's just how you structure the deal in terms of the capital in versus who's taking the initial profits out.
Mm-hmm.
We're flexible. Having the benefit of, you know, a multi-billion dollar company behind you gives you the ability to be, you know, creative in how you approach deals.
Yeah.
And comforting that people will get their, you know, guaranteed incomes that sometimes are promised in these deals.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I did a talk this morning, and one of the questions I had are, who are the companies to watch in Canada? And I rattled off a couple names and, you know, said Cineplex was one of them. And it drops down really quickly to companies that have like 10, 12 people in terms of solutions providers and that sort of thing. So I would imagine when you're going to Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies, whether that's Canadian Fortune 500 or whatever,
mm-hmm.
that being a multi-billion dollar company must have a fair amount of sway with risk-averse CFOs and CEOs.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we got into this business by acquiring kind of mom-and-pop shops that were in the digital digital sign business, they struggled with the guarantees that had been promised as part of the media deals. Having a backing with a 13,000 plus employee company, 7 million square feet of real estate, $200 million of, we've got some horsepower behind us. Mm-hmm. With 200 employees in this business today, it allows us to confidently, I wouldn't say make promises, but confidently deliver and exceed the expectations of our clients versus some of these 10, 12 person startups that have a solution that is not scalable.
Right.
The benefit of having a test lab literally in every market in Canada, with, in some cases, you know, we can have 5,000 people in a movie theater. Having a great piece of content up on a screen, connecting with an individual in our concession stand is something that we watch very closely. And we're quite lucky to have that in our backyard. And we take full advantage of it.
So do the digital menus that you have in your own food services in the theaters, that emanates out of this team as well?
We're in the process of actually rebuilding all the content and the platform that runs it. It was something we inherited. We advise on it. But today we're building a lab in our own offices because our concession teams recognize that the content we're putting out for our larger QSR clients and the ability to drive same-store sales growth with that is much higher than what they've been able to achieve themselves. So they see it as a tool that they should be embarking on as quickly as possible. We've got a system today that works. Mm-hmm. It's limited in its functionality. The additional functionality in terms of data and content personalization is where they want to get to as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. But you have the benefit of being able to test the way content looks really just on your own screens if you want, by the sounds of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Here in our offices and or in a theater,
right.
And or on a large LED, mm-hmm. in some of our facilities.
So a cinema company getting into digital signage doesn't seem inherently like a natural next step. Mm-hmm. It seems like a bit of a sideline, and I guess the worry would be, at least to a casual observer of, all right, 13,000 employees or whatever the number mm-hmm. is you mm-hmm. said, is this going to get enough attention from the senior management to really make a go of it?
It's a great question. You know, I supported this business from the corner of my desk for the last 6 or 7 years.
What do you mean by that, by the corner of your desk?
I was the head of real estate, senior VP of real estate and construction.
Uh-huh.
I ran business development for a period of time. I did government relations. I really enjoyed this business when we started to acquire companies, and I saw the potential it had.
Uh-huh.
I think it, as an adjunct to our media business, was, you know, worth exponential growth for us. And I supported the management teams that we inherited. When the company started to focus more on diversification, we saw that we couldn't run this business from the corner of the desk. So I was tapped and took it on as a full-time. I'm no longer involved with Cineplex real estate or construction. I support the executive team, but this is my focus 24/7.
Right. So your gig before would be going into a new suburban area of a big city where they're putting in a big-ass Walmart and other stuff, a power center, mm-hmm. and you would decide, okay, based on the numbers, based on everything that we know mm-hmm. from our experience, we'll build a theater here. And then you ran all that. And then in your spare moments, you also had this as part of your portfolio.
Yeah. Yeah, I, along with my team, developed and executed upon the real estate strategy for every major and minor market in Canada that we kept track of in terms mm-hmm. of where we wanted to be and where we were. And there's a 10-year real estate plan that you execute against. Did a lot of work in Europe and in the U.S. as well, developing the same plans for companies that we were involved with back in the early 2000s. Mm. But as my career started to change and I started to take on a bigger role and developed a lot of relationships in the shopping center and development world, there were a lot of areas of overlap.
Yeah.
Which led to some of the deals that I've done digital out of home, given the longstanding relationships I've had with some of Canada's prominent shopping center developers. Exciting part of my career, but I'm much more excited about this. I think it's a great way. It was a great left turn in my career.
Mm-hmm.
Something radically different, but very similar in different ways.
I would imagine the old gig had a lot of paperwork, a lot of contracts.
It did. I reviewed a lot of leases. I worked very closely with a lot of lawyers, but I learned to appreciate the power of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I learned to appreciate how to get through difficult issues. You're talking multi-million dollar leases that last and run 20 years could be worth
yeah.
$50, $60 million in terms of the obligations you have. Some of the best relationships I've developed and have withstood time or when you have to give someone bad news. We invested a lot of time in this relationship together. I'm sorry, but we want to close this location 5-10 years before the natural expiry of the lease.
Right.
Being able to convey that to someone is difficult. Being able to get them to buy in and understand it's the right thing and then find a business arrangement that works for everyone is actually almost more fulfilling than doing new deals.
Right.
So we took a very holistic approach to our portfolio and to the business, and I enjoyed it, and I'm trying to do the same thing here now.
I'm intrigued. Most of the time, the solutions providers who are in the space have kind of grown up in this space one way or another, or they come out of technology background of some sort. You're coming at it, and you came at it from business side, not knowing this business at all. I'm curious about your reaction and impression of like, what the hell is this?
There was a bit of that, but what I had the benefit of is our media group, which was selling on-screen advertising. I understood the value of an impression. I understood the value of an impression that was focused on a black screen before a movie started. Mm-hmm. I was always intrigued by being approached by those trying to sell media in our facilities, where they'd say, we want to put up a 48, 49, 46 inch screen, and we want to sell media, and we'll pay you a guarantee. And it's like, well, that's great, but do you know that we have a media division of X and that we can do it? When I started to see that kind of develop, I started to, being in my biz dev role, we were looking at a lot of different entertainment options to invest in, and I really started to key in on the digital media side, because it was growing. There were a lot of fragmentation,
right?
And I saw an opportunity. Having grown up in the digital out-of-home world, you can call it. Oh, no, I meant the shopping center world, which today we like to sell media in the Oxford, Ivanhoe, Morguard, Park Royal. I saw what they were going through. And the relationships that I developed over time allowed me to go in and kind of pitch them a different way of looking at a way to monetize the impressions that they're generating within the shopping centers, to create ecosystems with strong messaging that can drive a certain behavior within the shopping center and drive people on the path to purchase to the point of sale by working with the retailers and taking a more holistic approach about the signage and what role it played versus here's another BMW ad.
Yeah. The whole shopping mall thing, I went to Shop Talk, and I've been to a number of conferences where they're talking about the future of shopping malls and how it has to be much more of an experience. And one of the things that I've always wondered about is the conventional digital out-of-home that you find in a shopping mall is a concourse slab. It's a vertical poster or maybe something on a wall, but it's running advertising. And I've always wondered, is that delivering any kind of an experience, or are you working with these commercial retail real estate people to kind of bring them into where they need to be in terms of like a fully programmed place where you're immersed in media and art and everything, and a place that you want to come back to as opposed to a place that you shop at and, oh, by the way, there's an ad for Ford on that screen?
That's an excellent question. There's a wide spectrum in terms of how people have embraced this. Some would rather just have ads up all the time. The approach we take is, let's build a content strategy. Media will be one component of it. We can do an entertainment piece. We can do a sports update piece, depending on the market. Office towers with white collar workers are probably different than your suburban shopping center crowd.
Sure.
Day parting now starts to roll into how that content is developed. Being able to segment that, the visitation, to start building content pieces around that, but also monetizing the impressions that stand in front of those pieces, is where we've grown from over time. We still have a lot of work to do. The key is what everybody talks about is attribution. Brands want to know that what they're putting up on the screens today will lead to a return on investment, the investment in the content. That is not easy to measure. We've made a lot of investment in technologies that allow us to better measure it. The use of anonymous video analytics in those environments allow us to understand how the behavior is being changed.
Right.
We've had a number of activations over the years, most recently with Nike, did a big one with Disney, with a interactive screen in Ivanhoe Cambridge shopping centers. And in the case of Nike, it was in the Yorktal shopping center. But the interactive screen had a call to action for an individual to play a game targeted to young children under the age of 10. connected to the toys, sorry, the Cars 3 movie that Disney wanted to push the sale of toys to. And I know the head of merchandising in Disney Canada, she says, we'd love to connect with your customers in your movie theaters. And so that's great. But how's about in the shopping center where you've actually got them on a path to purchase and in fairly close proximity to a Toys R Us? So we created this interactive gaming opportunity. Kids loved it. Moms loved it because they got to take a cute picture of Jimmy, and Jimmy's license came out to her phone, her device. Along with it came a call to action to drive down to, walk down to the Toys R Us at the end of the hallway and redeem that coupon for a 50% off for a licensed car.
Right.
That's where we saw how you can create engaging, personalized experiences in a non-traditional way and as far deeper. And much more attention is being paid to that today by agencies. When I look at our business, I mentioned earlier, I'm in the impressions business. We've got close to $4 billion in all of our touch points. And yes, some are in McDonald's and Tim Hortons, and some are in DQ and in Oxford shopping centers. But we could target very specific groups by very specific times of day. So when I took this over, we were a digital sign company. Actually, when we took over, we were probably a digital sign, a digital menu board company. And my first step was to recognize we are kind of in the impressions business. How do we monetize them? How do we make those impressions worth more? Yeah. It's by creating great content. It's by developing content strategies that affect an emotional reaction to that content with that smart call to action. And it culminated with a lot of the cool things we're doing today in the digital out-of-home networks, be they in shopping centers or office towers, where you're connecting with an individual one-to-one and following their behavior to a point of sale.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
When we were having a look around first, you talked about this evolution and how you've had to find the right people, pulling them out of agency backgrounds and so on, who didn't automatically start thinking in terms of, okay, how many screens can we sell them, or how many software licenses or whatever it is, and start with strategy. Where does Cineplex Digital Media start and where do they finish? Because I think you're a classic case of a full turnkey where you can do as much as the client needs. And I sense, certainly with Tim Hortons in your past, that that was the gold standard for managed services. They didn't even have a login. Is that pretty much
You know, the approach we take today is we don't sell you a solution until we work through a program to understand what your pain points are, what you're trying to solve for. And you're right. The talent we're bringing on board today is a mix of highly technical solutions architects, highly technical developers and software developers who keep the engine humming with impulse. But the most recent additions we've made are on strategy and ideation. The investments we've made in our account teams is not, you know, we've got technical account managers that deal with customer support. But now we look to build teams that focus on customer success. Customer success is only driven by the metrics by which the customer is measuring success and failure. Uptime is one of them, absolutely. But for us, it's 24/7. If it doesn't work, you got a problem. Where we work with our clients today is, what are your pain points? How do we measure that this content is changing a behavior? And be it to spend more on X, or to create personalized content solutions, or in the case of some of the big activations we've done in shopping centers and big pieces, it's what is the target audience and what do you want them to feel from this? You can't develop your technical solution until you've kind of gone through the process. So we keep the gear guys out of the conversations until we've laid out a proper kind of strategy document that outlines what the client wants. Starts with a client brief, more agency-like. So we have added more agency people than ever before. Our account directors today are very different than what they ever were. They own the client in terms of delivering on the business requirements, but they get measured by net promoter scores and how satisfied our clients are. And that requires a lot of understanding where the client is going, understanding how we can help them get there, doing the regular QBRs. It's not selling them more gear. Mm-hmm. I find that sometimes people sell way too much gear. They need to spend more money on content.
Yes.
Right? The analogy I used with you earlier is you can have the greatest race car in the world, but if you have no fuel, it's a piece of furniture.
Yeah.
Very pretty to look at, but it doesn't win races. To win races, you need to have a mix of engineering, the car, a driver, and the fuel that's going to make that engine run. Content is one of those pieces. And I find that when I first started out, there wasn't enough attention paid to it. We ran into countless random acts of digital where you just, people come to you, it's like, we ended up with a $700,000 video wall that we don't know how to turn on.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember chuckling, is like, wow, Margaret, that's kind of funny because even if you turn it on, the screen's black.
Yeah.
What are you going to fuel it with? She said, well, maybe we'll do some CP24. You got a $700,000 video wall that is an architectural piece that can win awards, and you're going to run CP24? Backed up, built a content strategy, determined what kind of CMS solution they required to push content to it, ran it for them, it won awards. Looks fantastic.
I would imagine that these are conversations that really tend to work mostly with enterprise level clients because they already have like an agency of record. They already have those conversations. There would be any number of SMB sized businesses who would just look at this whole process of discovery and talking about pain points and everything else as a cash grab.
Interesting. I've never heard it put that way. I've never had a customer approach us with that type of feedback. I make it clear to them that it's difficult for us to get to the solution if we don't understand what you're solving for.
Mm-hmm.
We do work with clients' agencies. We do get a seat at the table sometimes. Other times we have to earn a seat at the table. However, I've never felt as though our contributions have been undervalued. We have had to deliver and show them that we can move the needle, though.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the one thing that we've invested in quite a bit, which is data. And we understand if we're moving the needle.
Yeah.
And we know how to do that.
Yeah, I was thinking more in terms of companies who you're just never going to work with because they don't get the whole agency thing.
Oh, yeah, we pick and choose who we want to work with. We're lucky. Our roster of clients give us latitude.
Actually mentioning them. Like a lot of times when I talk to companies with their big enterprise level clients, you can't even say them.
You know, when I look at most recently MEC, one of our newest
MEC,
clients.
Yeah.
We just announced that last week. They are excited about the stories that they could tell.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the discussions, the strategy sessions are around how do we bring the experiences to life in their facilities versus we got a bunch of gear and we want to put up nice photos. Excellent. The strategy and ideation sessions were more around the MEC owner as a co-op and the passion they have. So how do we take that and start determining the best kind of experiences, personalized experiences within the store?
Yeah, I mean, that's like REI in the States and it's outdoor lifestyle and, it's tremendously aspirational and it's a lifestyle choice and the visuals and everything that you could do in those stores is huge. And what I've seen to date, not what you've introduced, but what I've seen in MECs I've gone to is like three screens at cash and they're running a USB stick with just whatever shit they found.
Yeah, I think you'll be excited about what you see moving forward.
You have also done work in the States. I think you got a bank in the States.
We do, Citizens Bank.
And that's one that you inherited from?
No.
Oh, no, it was SunTrust that's DDC.
SunTrust
that, right?
We had inherited back in the day, but we were a sub to another supplier.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And is that the only kind of U.S. foothold you have right now? Because I know you have aspirations to do a lot more in the U.S., right?
Citizens Bank is one of our banks in the U.S., but 7-Eleven is a client in the U.S. as well.
Okay.
DQ is a client in the U.S. So we have a few, but it's a big market.
Is it a tougher nut to crack? Because you're known up here, as you have to go through the song and dance to explain what Cineplex is down in Chicago or something.
I think, you know, my predecessor did a good job to validate what we do. You know, having the clients we do, gets us a seat at the table, and you know, they understand the size of our company and the backing we have. It just clears out a lot of the proving yourself. When you're in for RFP presentation, you got to spend the first half hour telling your story about who you really are, just to get people to believe you. So I think we're doing okay in the U.S. I think there's a lot of opportunities. We do a lot of work in South America now with a client down there. We do a lot of work in Europe with a client there. And, you know, Subway Europe, it's fun. They want to move quickly.
Is that a challenge? Because you're now reaching across the Atlantic. There's time zones and everything else. It's not the same.
Yes, I'm traveling far too much. But it's exciting. You know, when you can work on a global scale, it's just great for recruiting talent who want to be able to work in with exciting clients, but more importantly, you know, in different places.
Is there a culture shift? Like, is there different things you have to understand, or fundamentally they're still trying to sell, get people to buy stuff?
Yeah. Ultimately, you know, a QSR operator in North America that operates in South America will have a very different approach on how they are positioning the story. Mm-hmm. The role that QSR plays in South America is aspirational versus here it's almost convenience oriented. Mm-hmm. So that is reflected in your content strategy. And we do work with the agencies to say, how do we kind of use that to drive the type of content on the screen that is going to affect the behavior change more effectively? Mm-hmm.
Consolidation in this industry is something that we've been hearing about for many, many years. And, you know, it's happened. Mm-hmm. But it seems like it's accelerating right now. And there are, you know, I was just showing you an email of an announcement today. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you guys see as part of your growth strategy, is acquiring other companies?
We are constantly assessing opportunities. And if they fit our strategy, then we will move them forward. But right now, we have nothing to announce.
Yeah. But you're not going to do it right now?
We will not be doing that right now. And not that I would tell you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But it is, it's not easy. It's not easy integrating, but I think we've learned from the acquisitions we've made. Mm-hmm. I think we're comfortable doing that. I think we've got backing that gives me confidence in where we can take this business. Mm-hmm. Corporate backing gives me confidence in where we can take this business. So we'll see where the future brings us. Right now, we're just trying to digest this new office and onboarding some new clients, and it's pretty exciting times.
Are there holes in what... in your service delivery right now, things that you want to add, like capabilities, functionality?
Our innovation team is constantly working closely with the account teams. They're with the clients, determining what the future state is that we will need. So we've spent a lot of time in AR, a lot of algorithmic and machine learning. We're developing a lot of tools and capabilities that we don't have today that align with where we think the business is going. Programmatic is one of them. And having the benefit of a test lab, like I did mention earlier about Cineplex, is exciting for us. We have a philosophy, though, that we either build, borrow, or buy what we need to deliver, depending on the urgency. Mm-hmm. You know, on the build side, we would look at buying technology if it's going to get us to the market and what we think we need quicker. Mm-hmm. We kind of map that all out. You know, my real estate background, I worked on plans all the time in terms of where we needed to be. I take the same approach here in terms of who are we today? Where are we going in terms of what functionality, what expertise do we need? What type of people do we need to add? Do we build that functionality in-house, or do we borrow it via partnerships, or do we buy it? And we do go through a very diligent process, and I've got the benefit of support with the Cineplex infrastructure that...
They tracked it down.
Yeah, they finally got me. The Cineplex infrastructure and the acquisition teams and the due diligence that we get from our planning team is great, because it gives me the confidence to go to them and say, how does this look? How does this feel? Mm-hmm. They help with the process. Just the whole infrastructure that we've developed in the Cineplex ecosystem, be it on the procurement side, the HR side, the planning side, the finance team, they give us a lot of support that allows us to run the business with confidence in the backing we have. Mm-hmm.
Now, you've got this office here. You've also got office in London, Ontario.
We do.
And is there still an office in Waterloo?
There is, yeah. We have about 15,000 square feet in Waterloo. I think 70-odd people. Mm-hmm. Waterloo is a great market in terms of attracting talent that's coming out of those wonderful schools. Jennifer Smith recently joined us as a senior VP, sits on the board of Communitech. Yep. We've made a lot of investments.
Incubator Hub.
Yeah, made a lot of investments in that community, and we'll be there. we will be there for quite a while.
Yeah, I would imagine that's important. You've got Google's down there and any number of companies, and it's much smaller center, what, 300, 400,000 people.
Yeah, about 400, yeah.
It's affordable, and I would imagine while there's a lot of competition for developers and for technical talent and everything there, I'm sure it's acute here.
We are always looking for talent. Waterloo has actually become a very competitive market, and you're paying premiums. Being connected as we are, we get access to talent. Mm-hmm. It's just a fact of doing business. You just mm-hmm. need to pay. And it's just the reality that we work with our HR teams and our recruitment teams to find the best to fill the gaps. This business is going to require certain investments in people over the years, and we've kind of mapped it out. And we think we're well situated with our locations and what we're pulling out of the London market, Waterloo, and Toronto. Mm-hmm.
I know you talked about how strategy is everything, and the technology has to come kind of second in terms of the process. But I'm curious if there is technology out there that's bubbling up that gets you excited.
And just to be clear, we are a tech company.
Sure.
But
you're leading with strategy,
yeah,
not with the bells and whistles.
Right. Our strategy teams work closely with our tech teams to kind of help bring those digital solutions to life. They work very closely. I'm really excited about machine learning. I'm really excited about some of the products we've got in the pipeline that will allow for personalized content. I'm really excited about some of the things I've seen is the interaction between AR and screens today. Some of the holographic stuff we've seen are kind of neat. I think it might have an application in sponsorship in digital out of home. It might have an application in retail. Mm-hmm. You know, programmatic is exciting, but it's growing slowly. Uh-huh. We're lucky in that our platform has a rock solid base, which is the EK3 Impulse platform that we can build on. But our innovation program is driven by Frank Abreu and his team, and they work to not develop science projects for the sake of it. Mm-hmm. They work very closely with the account teams to say, how and what are you solving for your clients, and how can we help you get there with innovation?
Right.
And by that, it could be kind of optimizing some system on chip applications. It's how do we create another interactive app? How do we create a mobile interactive connection between a screen and a mobile device, which we've done a lot of, and working with our media groups to understand, okay, so how do we monetize this? How do we monetize this new technology?
Right.
And it's better to do that before they tell you we can't monetize that. So don't you know, if it's not solving a problem for anyone, let's not invest in it.
Yeah.
So there's lots of exciting things we're tinkering with. You'll see some of them over the next few months. And yeah, it's kind of neat stuff.
You talked about mapping out your hires and everything else. Where's the company going to be in like, let's say, 2 years in terms of scale and what you're doing? Will there be more to it, or it'll be kind of a enhancement of what you already have?
Yeah, then I'd have to kill you if I told you the answer to that one, because that would really tell you what our secret sauce is. But I do think...
And a lot of other people. My four listeners.
I do think we're committed to this business in the long term. Mm-hmm. You will see us continuing to grow in a disciplined manner. There has been a lot of undisciplined growth in this industry.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of fragmented, small little startups that shot the puck and never really got there. You'll continue seeing me at the shows. I'll continue filling you in as we move along. But I do have a big plan for the next 3 to 4 years in terms of the types of clients that we're targeting, the types of technologies that we think we should bring to market. But most importantly, it's unlocking value from the ecosystems that we've generated with Cineplex and within the impressions that we generate, and working more closely with our account teams to deliver for their clients will require investment in people, in tools, and in the development of our platform.
Fab, thank you.
Thank you. That was a lot of fun, even with the cops stopping by.
I'll deny I know you.
Yeah. All right.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 69 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.